Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel #LinuxShow. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And we're back.
It is The Linux Show for January the 21st, 2002. We are back once again broadcasting live. The crew has all made it. I was sort of doubtful that we were going to all make it here tonight, but looks like we've put it all together with everybody traveling around the country to various locations this week. I was really concerned about putting this thing together or potentially ending up with a train wreck, but we did it. We are back for another weekly edition of The Linux Show. Doc, I know you're there. You're preparing for a road trip. When you leave?
It's funny because I'm leaving in a few hours, and I'll be back here a few hours before next Tuesday night. But I guess we're not on next Tuesday anyway, are we? Are we not? We're not. We're every other week now. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, but it's going to be a little less than a week.
So you're going to North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go see my mom. She's turning 90, and my sister's been caring for her, and her house has been properly conditioned with broadband and Wi-Fi, so it's now safe for me to come.
Oh, you'll be in heaven.
So yeah. So I'll be able to get some work done when I'm not hanging with mom. So that's the deal.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It will be fun. I wish I could hang more with some of my old friends there, but probably I'm not gonna have a chance to do that. But in any case, I will be there for the Super Bowl. Go Raiders.
Yeah, hey, that's cool. We got Pirates and Pirates in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. It's the all eye patch series. That's it.
I didn't think of it quite that way, Doc. But
I talk like a pirate, eh? I don't think the Bucks have an eye patch, do they? I think only the Raiders have an eye patch. I'm not sure.
Don't know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but it's the same. It's the same thing, roughly.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Russ, I know you're in New York City right now visiting LWE.
Oh yes.
As good as that is, I mean, I know you've had a rough time today, and we won't go into the sordid details, but at least you've got some news from the expo to start out with, even if you had a little trouble. Arnie, what have you been up to?
Oh, nothing. Just finals week this week, so it's kind of busy, but. Things are going really well. I'm going to initiate within the next week. We start the next semester, and I'm going to initiate at the beginning of the semester the Chupacabra network, which is the Chupacabra. It's a Mexican kind of like the boogeyman. It means goat sucker. It's this little creature that goes sucking goats out of the goat herds, and also bad kids who don't mind. And I've named the network at school. I'm initiating a new network at school that'll be student run, and running all Linux. And I'm donating two machines, two computers, two displays, two keyboards to the cause. And then the school district itself has got some surplus stuff. And I told the guy in charge that I'll take all he can give me. And we're going to run first a unconnected network, which will be an ample demonstration, and then we'll see if we can get some connection.
Well, that's very, very cool.
I think it's very cool, too.
Real exciting. And Kevin and I are here, broadcasting from our new headquarters in Chicago, Illinois. Well, Kevin's actually still in Aurora. Still hasn't managed to move out, and I'm still in Naperville, but the main signal is feeding out of Chicago, and we've been doing well with our twin circuit feed out of Chicago for, it's been up now for about a month and seems to be working out pretty well for us. We're going to go ahead and jump right on into the first segment because there's a lot of news, and we want to be able to give Adam Kozman at least 10 or 15 minutes at the end of the show. We'll go ahead and jump right in into the news because there is so much of it. And I'll open up because I know a couple of people will probably want to make some comments about this one way or t'other. But last week we opened up with a story about the people at Lindos.com, and I tell you, I have never gotten so much email about something I have said on this show ever before. Shocked the heck out of me when I made the comment I made about Lindos.com and how I said various things about the company and you know, opinions of mine about the company. And had no idea that they had apparently the following that they do, because I got a lot of flame emails during the course of the week, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop pointing fingers when I think fingers are due to be pointed. And so the first story of the week happens to be also about our friends at Lindos.com, and that is, if you go to the first link on our links list, www.desktoplinks.com, and there's a couple more things, the URL, you can just click on the link. But anyways, it's a story about the Desktop Summit, and the Desktop Summit is, I am predicting, a matter of a few days away from having its name changed to something along the lines of the Lindos Partners event of some kind, because of the large number of companies that were participating are dropping out at rapid rates. And according to my sources, which I'll tell one of them, Joe Barr, he's on top of everything all the time. Joe Barr is always emailing me about stuff. We're trading tips back and forth, and Joe Barr is really on top of the story about the Linux Desktop Summit. He's got every single one of the vendors on the line and is talking to them daily about whether they're in the show or out of the show. And it certainly looks like people are really upset by the behavior.
By the way, Joe Barr just logged into the IRC.
Hey, cool. You say hi to Joe Barr and tell him that I'm crediting him for a lot of the stuff that's happening about this story. But it's really plain and simple. Lindos contacted the people from LinuxDesktop.com. They put together an event based upon certain criteria. In the 11th hour, Lindos.com didn't feel, well, whatever they felt. I'm not going to put words in their mouth. For whatever reason, they decided to pull the rug out from underneath Bruce Perens as a keynote and put in Michael Robertson, the CEO of Lindos.com, as the keynote speaker instead. And
that's okay. I can put words in their mouth, so call on me next.
Well, you can, but, you know, there's been no official statement out of Lindos.
Oh, I have one.
Okay. You have an official statement?
Yep.
From Lindos.
Yeah, from Michael Robertson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, see, Michael Robertson is particularly happy with me this week.
That's right. He can be unhappy with me this week.
Because I said about him last week. You know, I've been trying to talk to that guy for over a year, and it wasn't until my little tirade last week that he bothered to ever reply to any of my emails, and he's so mad at me. But anyways, but real simple. Again, story is the entire committee of vendors and community organizations, all of their plans were basically just blown off, and Lindos did what they wanted to do in terms of setting the schedule. And so very, very rapidly in succession, a number of the groups involved, including DesktopLinux.com and CodeWeavers and apparently HP is now dropped, and the list grows longer and longer and longer every day. But Arnie, you said you have an official quote from Michael.
Yeah, this is from an article that is printed, let me see, ZDNet. And the title of the article is HP Walks Out Cloud's Desktop Linux Show. So HP's walked out too.
Yeah.
And of course, we knew about that. Robertson was, I'm quoting from the article, Robertson was unrepentant, saying he wasn't obliged to follow the advisory board's recommendation. Interesting conclusion. Quote, Lindos.com, this is quoting Mr. Robertson, Lindos.com is paying to put up on this conference, and like any conference planner, we ultimately have the obligation to make the choices to ensure the success of the conference, he said in an email interview. Quote, the Desktop Linux Summit is heavily consumer-focused, which not everyone agrees with, but it is what will make this conference very unique. It's not about politics or the philosophy, but about affordable Linux products available to consumers today. Quote, and continuing, every company attends wants to talk about their products or services to advance their agenda, so I'm not sure Lindos.com is different in that regard than any company or organization in attendance. Unquote, Robertson added. Now, Mr. Robertson, you have pulled what is classically called a bait and switch. And I'll tell you right now, if I was one of the people going into this show, I would have pulled out too. And to stab Bruce Perens in the back and HP in the back is unconscionable. And Mr. Robertson, if you were angry with Jeff last week, you can be angry with me this week, because I think what you pulled is despicable. Linux is a community of developers who stick together like glue. And if you wanna play your Linux's Lindos game, we can go play the game that we played with Red Hat some 3 or 4 years ago. In that Linux is not Lindos. And if you want to have a Linux conference, you got to invite everybody to the table. Or, guess what? You can have the table all to yourself.
Well,
I've said my words.
I agree. And that's why I think that the only logical out for Lindos as a company is to change the name of the event. I think if they don't change the name of the event to the Lindos Partner Conference or whatever, I think that this is the death of anybody.
He's on the. By the way, Mr. Robertson is on the chat channel now.
Well, then good. He can comment on his own. But I think this is the death of their company in terms of cooperation from other Linux entities by doing this. And I have invited Mr. Robertson to appear on a show next month and talk about the behavior of his company and why some of us within the community are disgruntled with him. And that invitation is still on the table. It is within the realm of possibility that I have judged him too harshly. I doubt it, but it is possible. So, being fair, the invitation is there for Mr. Robertson to come on the show and have his piece. So, anybody else want to comment on this?
Well, one thing I found very interesting was that I don't know how many people heard Bruce Perens on NPR, I think it was Friday.
That was a great piece.
Absolutely wonderful show.
And the interesting thing, though, was that Mr. Robertson was on there for a few moments. And what he said within that context was, you know, fine from a business standpoint. Sounded quite reasonable.
Me too, but, I agree.
But, you know, it's just somewhat strange that having the two of them on the same show at the same time, and at the same time, you know, plug is being pulled on Bruce, and that's just strikes me as a very odd sort of happening.
An unusual behavior, to say the least. Now, in all fairness, okay, I like Bruce. Bruce drives me nuts. Okay, and he knows he drives me nuts. There's just, you know, certain personality types clash, and so sometimes Bruce and I get under each other's skin. But having said that, you know, he's a really great guy, and he's really servicing an important role within the Linux community, and he should be given the credit and, more importantly, the respect that he is due for the work he has done for so many years as an advocate, and I think more than has been said about the value of of consumer-oriented Linux, or whatever the words Arnie quoted were, I think more needs to be said than that to justify yanking the rug out from underneath Bruce's parents.
And other people. I mean, they did a little more than that. They basically decided that, and if your information is correct, that they're going to change the name of the conference to
I said that, Arnie.
Yeah.
I said that that should be what is done.
Oh, that should be what it
is. I think that is the only appropriate path for an agreeable solution is for them to change the name of the event from Desktop Linux and pretending it's a community event and just call it what it is. It is a Windows Partners Conference.
If they
fine.
Do that, then...
That's fine. He can do whatever he wants. Just like Caldera has Geoform. Nobody criticizes Caldera for having Geoform.
Or the O'Reilly Open Source Conference.
It's their thing.
Yeah.
But they don't hide it. They tell the truth.
And everybody's invited to the O'Reilly Conference.
Yeah, everybody's invited to Geoform, too.
Yeah.
Go into it with the understanding that it's a Caldera event. So, next story. Russ, we're going to jump over to you. You got a whole pile of stories this week.
Yeah, I got a few here. I'm kind of working blind because sitting in the hotel room with no network access. But the first one on the list was DVD John, Jan Johansson, or however it's pronounced, over in Norway there. It appears that his dealings with the local Norway law may not be over with, and that they want to appeal the decision of his acquittal. And unfortunately, this isn't overly surprising, although inside some sense it certainly is, because you just had a trial where the penalty that the prosecutors were going for was basically, kind of the ultimate slap on the wrist. It was, basically getting a bad boy from the court and being put on probation or something like this. But obviously this case really is important enough that they can, take a verdict of innocent and then try to challenge that again. So obviously someone over there realizes the importance of that ruling.
Yeah. You know what I think is interesting about stories like this is that those countries that have double jeopardy don't appreciate little loophole rules like that until you hear about stories where at the whim of a prosecutor somebody's getting retried the same thing twice. And it just doesn't happen here.
Yeah, this couldn't happen in this country.
Yeah.
Jan Johansson would be walking the streets free.
Yeah, I mean, they could go after you civilly on a criminal case and vice versa. They can go after you criminally if they lose the civil case, but it's funny how it's just not the same. Little subtleties in the law vary. Got any more stories?
Yeah, there was a story over at InfoWorld about WSIS failing to endorse open source, which apparently a group of delegates from, as I recall, I think there was about 50 different countries involved, largely Asia, but trying to put together a forward-looking document about technology. And originally, apparently, they had wanted to say that open source was encouraged, was supported. I think that was the wording by this group. And apparently, from pressure from the U.S. delegation, who would have thunk it, the wording was changed to something like "encouraged as appropriate usage." So. Once again, we see the long arm of some people in Redmond, largely, reaching into international matters. But the thing that I find interesting here is that clearly the leaning of the organization, according to the reports, was definitely towards open source. And even after getting complaints about the wording, it's still a pretty open source positive wording. just not quite as strong as they originally wanted. So I take that as very good news overall. I don't know if anyone else has any opinion on that. Outside of that, the last story that I had was that Microsoft is once again, I guess for the second time now, making its appearance at Linux World Expo. And there is a link on the Linux Show webpage talking about what they hope to achieve, apparently trying to get, or at least they say trying to get people who are migrating from Unix to Linux to migrate from Unix to Windows instead. And I was talking with Chris DeBona today, and he mentioned that down in the food court of the Javits Center, a number of the tables are apparently kind of laminated with Microsoft Microsoft advertisements or Microsoft speak. So that will be very interesting on being able to get adequate amount of indigestion with your meal. I think that was very kind of him. But
if the food doesn't do it first,
yeah. Well, this sort of removes all doubt, I think. But it is an interesting interesting event in that regard. The other thing I would just mention about Linux World Expo is that, you know, in the about a year and a half now that I've been doing the InfoWorld column, I was contacted by more PR people in the 10 working days prior to this show than I think I've been contacted in the entire time I've been doing my column. There is an incredibly aggressive stance going on at the show, and it would be very interesting to see how it plays out. The show floor hasn't opened yet, but there's a bunch of interesting things supposed to be out there, so I'm waiting to see how this is going to play out.
Can I put some kudos where they're due?
Sure.
IDG is probably due a lot of the credit for that. I mean, I've got some problems with IDG's company at times, but one of the things they really seem to do well, and you know, I really have no idea how they do it because I've never really sat down and talked to them, but whoever over there is in charge of acting as liaison between media people and exhibitors in all of their events does a really good job. Historically, any event that I've ever gone to that's an IDG event, I've gotten 2 to 3 times the number of contacts that I have at expos put on by, say, you know, Penson or Key3 or one of the other big media companies. So I think it's IDG that's the reason for that. And I think there's probably a second reason. You know, we got a recession going on, and if people are going to exhibit in an expo, they want to get their money's worth, and they want to speak to every...
I think it's, to some degree, a different bunch of people, too.
Could
be. Your experience, Russ, that these are, to some extent, a different group of people than we've been hearing from before? Exhibitors?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of the big players.
But, huh?
I said that there's a lot of the big players. There's some in the mix that I haven't run into before, but I guess the thing that I find interesting is the intensity. I mean, you know,
not like it used to be, though.
Well, I'm saying the intensity of the PR campaign. That's the thing that's getting me. That you know, I really get the sense that if I were in a room with a lot of these. A lot of these folks, I would be literally, you know, sort of like yanked by the shoulders and forced to watch their demos, etc. I mean, there's this just a strength about all of this, you know, it's like, come see now, please, you know, that just hasn't been there. I don't know whether it's, it doesn't really fit as anxiety, but it just, there's, an intensity about it all that has been atypical.
Yep.
So I'm not quite sure what to make of it, and that's part of the reason why I'm kind of interested to see how it'll play out.
I want to focus on one of the comments that you made, because I know it was really on Arnie's list as well, and I think everybody who has an opinion on the panel should jump in on this, and that is that the story about, as you said, Microsoft making really a much larger play this time than they did at the previous Linux World Expo. They're more visible. They're, you know, splashing their stickers everywhere, and they're even a little bit smarter about how they're populating their booth. If what I have been led to believe by the guy that I talked to from Microsoft, he said that they only are allowing one sales executive in the booth at any moment, and that the booth is supposed to be populated by Microsoft coders and to give it a completely different look and feel.
Now, that's kind of disingenuous.
Yeah, maybe.
Put Linux coders on a Microsoft booth?
No,
right.
I didn't say Linux coders. I just said they're coders.
Oh, they're coders, yeah.
I mean, they may be working on, who knows what, I don't know, Windows 2000.
Yeah, well, you know, they're putting more exploits and bugs into IIS.
That's besides the point, Ernie. It's a perception they're trying to come across with. And the question I'm trying to ask here is, what is Microsoft really trying to accomplish?
It's an interesting question, especially since you just highlighted that business about having techies in the booth, because this is coming at a time when, at least as far as I'm expecting, I doubt I will find many technical people in any of the booths at all outside of this, because you know, the emphasis that I'm getting loud and clear from everything is business, business, business. You know, this is a money show. I mean, I did Enterprise Linux Forum there in Boston a couple months back, and you know, that was a business focused show, and this one is definitely a business focused show. And so it's kind of strange to me that Microsoft would be taking a technical focus, because they're kind of running against the grain as far as I can tell at this show. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Does anybody get a feeling, I don't know, that perhaps that they're trying to pass off this shared source opportunity that they've been talking about with, you know, their top 25 clients? Is this somehow includes them in the game that's going on at the Linux World Expo? I don't know.
I was reading somewhere that they've made a kind of an executive decision to not push shared source and to not push to basically not be antagonistic, at least publicly. Their new stance is rather to respect the fact that customers have Linux and customers have their stuff and that they cohabit a lot of companies. And so now why, you know, I mean, whether that's a reason to be at Linux World Expo or not, I'm not sure. But that, I have read, however, that the, you know, the kind of stuff we had 2 years ago with the debate at the open source conference is not going to happen again. That's not part of the strategy. The strategy is not that, you know.
That's too risky.
Yeah, and it's also, it doesn't convince anybody of anything. I think that they're a little bit tired of being the bad guys in some ways, and they just want to be out there.
Yeah, well, they can't possibly win an argument like that.
Well, you know, what's interesting about the arguments they're making, you know, their mantra now seems to be Windows is cheaper, Windows is cheaper. You know, right, so what they're doing and their technique and trying to convince everybody like this is to buy a bunch of studies. You know, they got money for it. And so now they've got these studies coming out saying, Windows is cheaper, Windows is cheaper, which are handily just taken apart and stomped on by the Linux crowd.
Yep.
And you know, this provides, you know, grist for our mill, and all of a sudden we get these studies coming out saying, you know, well, you know, you can say that Windows is cheaper, but let's really look at the real situation here. And they look foolish.
Well, you know, something, Chris DeBone and I, when we were talking today, this was kind of one of the things that came out when we discussed this particular issue. One of the hazards that we have is that those of us who've been around the Linux world, the open source world, for a few years, we can probably recite, you know, the stories that we've heard about how people have saved money using Linux or BSD or what have you. I still remember a fellow from the 1997 Atlanta Linux Showcase who went on and on, standing on the street corner with me, talking about how he was able to use less hardware to get more done, and that one person could manage more machines at his installation that were running Linux than those running Windows, etc. And I've heard that story again and again and again, and we've come to kind of take it as a, you know, a given. And you know, to some extent, you know, I definitely say it's true, but I wonder if sometimes we're not as detailed as we should be in our defense, because we see it as a given, but it's clear that some people in the IT world, you know, who haven't been exposed to it, aren't going to see it as a given, and we have to kind of explain it plainly. That there's a lot at work here. It's not just about the price of a box that you get. It's about a whole lot more. It's doing a whole lot more with a whole lot less at less total cost.
And the total cost, I mean, part of the deal is that the Windows, Microsoft never addresses is the upgrade treadmill built into the Windows, into the Microsoft configuration.
Yeah.
It's not just going to cost you once.
Yeah, license renewal is never a part of the calculation of total.
No, right? The upgrade treadmill is never there. And furthermore, then the other thing is they, the last study I saw was IDG study. And what they said was, well, they use a 5-year plan, a cycle. That flies in the face of their pleas to their customers to upgrade every 2 to 3 years. You know, whenever they have the next big release of Microsoft Office. You know, you have to do this to be compatible. Of course, you know, can't do that way. You can't rig the study one way and then rig your license the other way.
Let's move on. Do you have any more stories for us?
I think that pretty well cleans me up.
Okay, Doc, have you got a big one for the week?
Yeah, well, there's one that hit right after the last show, and it was unfortunate news, and it's 6 days old at this point. But that was that the Larry Lessig and Eric Eldred lost their Supreme Court case, 7-2. There's been a lot of processing of that since then. Larry, on his weblog, came off as originally as quite depressed about it, and after that is also quite sort of flummoxed about it as well, because it didn't really break the way he thought it would. Getting into the legalese, the constitutional legalese, there's the enumerated powers of the Congress, and he thought like Ginsburg, who wrote the majority opinion, he did not expect to land her anyway, because she's basically good, rolls with Congress. But the others, they were what he called the silent five, who went along with the majority but didn't say anything. And then the dissents gave some guidance, but not a whole lot either. So there's been a lot of processing of it since then. But it definitely was a call to political action after this, because obviously we're not going to win this one in the courts right now.
I think, Doc, if I'm not misreading what the court said, that's what they said.
Yeah.
Is that this is a political action.
Right.
Like, not an action.
Fix
for
it in Congress, don't come to us anymore with this. And in fact, today I've been working on a piece for Linux Journal on this, but I put up some of my thinking yesterday, just sort of as bait, and I pointed Larry Lessig and some others to it, and Larry rather liked it. The point that I made, if you go to, and in fact, there's a link on the front of the of the Linux Show site that points to the American Open Technology Consortium. So it's posted there, and it's currently the top item, and nobody's posted over it yet. And basically, the way I've been thinking about it is it really breaks three ways. And you can look at it politically, which is that, you know, the Sonny Bono decision, the Sonny Bono Act, was the Copyright Term Extension Act, was a political decision on a political issue, and that's why it passed several years ago. And then you can look at it legally in terms of in strictly constitutional terms, which is the way that Larry approached it. And I think there's sort of general consensus that he waged a constitutional battle and lost a political one. And as he put it, that shook his confidence in the system to some degree. And it was shaken once before with the decision on the Bush in favor of George Bush in the election. Which I think he predicted would go the other way. But in any case, the third way, and this is what I recommend looking at, is metaphorically. I think what's happened is that that Hollywood and I think just in general, we've come to the point where we understand copyright primarily in terms of property and not in terms of speech and not in terms of artistic performance or any of the other ways that we can understand it. And even though that copyright is not necessarily constructed as a property issue, that's how it's generally understood in terms of common sense. And if you look at the language used by the government, if you look at the language used by Hollywood, it's the same, which is about, you know, property and ownership and rights and theft and piracy and granting this and transferring that. It's all about property and not about the kind of stuff that we read about in Creative Commons, which is about sharing and specifying and so forth and so on. So it's just been sort of an interesting thing to watch and sort of going on right now, but I think it's very important to begin to, you know, to look at calling the geeks back into action again.
Yeah.
We really need to do that.
Yeah, we really do.
Funny thing about that, what your comment, Doc, was that is that no one can read Thomas Jefferson's letters about copyright and patents during when they were forming the opinion on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. No one can read those and come away with anything other than less exposition.
Right, but Jefferson's weren't the only ones. I mean, on that issue, Franklin was on the other side, I mean, it's been complicated since the beginning, and I think part of the problem is nobody is reading Thomas Jefferson. I was pointed today, though I didn't have a chance to point anybody else to it. Mark Twain wrote about it and talked about it 150 years ago. Saying more or less the same thing, that, you know, copyright in perpetuity is kind of an insane thing.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
No. No, it doesn't. And
well, it makes sense to Disney.
But I think there's a one blogger named Richard Bennett, who's generally a fairly belligerent character, but he actually made some pretty good points, which were, and one of them was, politically right now, it, you know, and this is what the dissent said. I think it was Breyer who said something like this in one of the dissents. In the dissent, is that if we, you know, there are solutions and exceptions that we can propose that can be proposed in Congress as modifications to the Sonny Bono Act that do take the inactive stuff that's in the public, that is currently not being getting any money for anybody and turning it back into the public domain. Larry had a really good suggestion, which is if you have a copyright that is over X years of age, you pay a dollar tax per year in order to keep it out of the public domain. Otherwise, it defaults. In other words, if you really think there's any chance of ever making money on this, then you'll do that. But doing that would also potentially embarrass Disney and some of these others, because there are certain things that they are not making any money on and won't at all. I mean, there's a huge percentage of the intellectual property of Hollywood that's just been out of circulation for a long time. is rotting in vaults, and you know, and would be of use. This is even more true, really, of the in the publishing field, where an enormous amount of material just gets dumped into the world and then gets yanked out after a period of time, and then just goes on the remainder shelves and gets forgotten. But anyway, there are a number of compromise solutions that could be offered that would be doable and would get us in the door, as it were, rather than just, you know, shouting, you know, about how awful everything is. But obviously we do need to act, and it's time to fire up a number of things that we've neglected, and I will take some responsibility for having that.
Absolutely. The link that Doc was talking about earlier is on our website, www.aotc.info. Go there. I think there's a PayPal link somewhere on the site. Donate money to get the political ball rolling. Now is the time to start for the election that is 2 years away. So
right. I said that's one thing. Another thing, too, is I think those of us working for companies like Intel and Dell and Gateway and Apple and HP and other technology companies of any kind, these are, especially if it's a company large enough to have a lobbying organization, a Boeing even, any large technology concern, they are not necessarily, they don't necessarily have to be on the same side as Hollywood on this thing. Hollywood has an unusual amount of uncalled for power in Congress right now. I feel with this Congress that there is a chance that it may shift. You know, most of the people in the Hollings bill were Democrats. Well, Hollings doesn't run that committee anymore. I think people like Feinstein, if she sees a tide shifting in California, will not necessarily stick with Hollywood and everything. You know, I think there are ways of getting some effect here.
Unless we can produce the cash,
right?
I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's not. We need the cash, and the reason I brought up the big companies is because they're going to have to come up with the big cash.
Yep.
And they're going to have to come up with the big.
So lobby the people you work for, donate
right.
money to the AOTC.
Right.
That's a real good point. We are running a little bit tight on the time, so I want to tell people that a couple of the links that are on the website, we're probably going to have to put those stories off till next week. Most of the stories that are left are links about new desktops. There's going to be lots of talk about desktops. There's one out from SUSE, and there was a brand new one out from New Zealand that has just been released, of hearing lots of good things about the new Linux distro coming out of New Zealand this week. But I want to hold off on those stories because I want to jump in with one before we take the break and then bring in our guest. And that's a story that has been just bouncing all over the place. And it's actually one of the title articles this week, has HP finally seen the light? If you go to our website, there is a link to what I believe was the original source story for this, but I may be dead wrong, but it's at CNN.com in their money division, article about HP getting $2 billion in sales from Linux. First of all, one of the things I'd like to clarify on this is the inside scoop I have gotten is that this $2 billion in sales is, in theory, on paper. They didn't, until very, very recently, even start tracking sales on Linux. They're presuming that when people order a ProLiant business class server with no OS on it, that it's going to end up with Linux. They're just presuming that. And so there has been a degree of a paper juggle to come up with this $2 billion worth of sales links linked to open source. But the surprise is that September last year, we had a story out of a speech by, what was her name? Russ, you know who I'm talking about.
Judy Chavis.
Judy Chavis. Judy Chavis saying, HP will never, won't for the near foreseeable future ever sell Linux machines off of their website. And, you know, you all remember that, how I went on a tirade on that back in September. And she was completely embarrassed about the fact that there were other companies that were already selling machines off of their website. So what happens now? Boom, out of the blue, what is now happening at the HP website? They've got Linux machines for sale as of this week. And a lot of machines and a lot of different distros available as well. I think I saw three or four different distros for sale on the commercial side.
Okay, we're going to see SUSE, Red Hat, who else?
You can order Debian as well.
Debian, oh, that's good. This is very progressive. But this is one of my stories. So it's
nothing on the consumer side yet, in terms at least that I saw on the website. But I have talked to a couple people at HP today about this dramatic turn of events. Of okay, it's the CEO Curly Fiona, or Farina rather, is making this big pitch. Obviously, there's big doings over at IBM. IBM has made a ton of money this year off of Linux, and they can't afford to just idly sit back and watch that run away. And so if you go to the HP website and look on the commercial side, you're going to see tons of stuff all up and down the entire HP/Compaq line of commercial-grade equipment. So, real, I think, interesting story of a radical turnabout in just 6 months' time. Now, let's take a short break and kick back, relax. Everybody hang in there. We're going to come back for a fairly short segment number two with our guest. We're going to be talking about Windows Refund Day that's coming up in just a scant 2 days. It's an opportunity for y'all to participate. Go out and hire a lawyer. Sue Microsoft. Everybody hang in there for just 2 or 3 minutes. We'll be right back with the second segment of the Linux Show.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
And we're back.
It is January 22nd. Excuse me, 21st, 2003. We're here for segment number two of the weekly edition of The Linux Show. I keep on getting emails from you people out on the chat room trying to get me to sneak stories in. In the future, try and send them to us ahead of the show. The email address is staff@thelinuxshow.com. We're always willing to take your suggestions for things to talk about, or feel free to just go ahead and drop them right into the IRC room, and you can talk amongst yourselves for a little bit. But we're short on time. It's 8:53 here in Chicago. We're going to jump right into segment number two. We have, as a guest with us this evening, a guy who's been here before. A few months ago, I invited Adam to join us just to talk about the organization itself, WindowsRefund.net, and the process underway of his court case and a couple other people he had hooked up with their court cases in terms of going after Microsoft to get their $109 back. It's been interesting following the story up until this point, but now we have a second part to the story, and that is happening in just 2 days, January the 23rd. Organization WindowsRefund.net is sponsoring Windows Refund Day. Actually, this is Windows Refund Day Part 2, I believe. It was Don Marty who started it up, wasn't it, Doc?
Yeah, it was. I think it was Don and several other people, but Don was involved in it. I know that.
Yep.
And I may have even been his idea. He's the first guy I heard it from, anyway.
Don't know. Adam, do you know?
Yeah, I know Don was actually part of the first group that went forward with Windows Refund Day and launched the initial campaign. I've spoken to a couple other people that were involved. Jay Sulzberger, who
right.
You may know, has been a tremendous help to me. He's actually somewhat of a local celebrity and has given me a lot of ideas, you know, and a lot of good concepts to run with and whatnot. Don has been a big supporter of what I'm trying to do here, just by publishing, you know, a couple articles that I had submitted over to Linux Journal. You know, and just helping me in terms of advocacy and that kind of thing. But the strategy of Windows Refund Day 2 is very different from the first.
Sure looks like it.
Yeah, it's actually, it's day and night, I guess, right? Because where the original Windows Refund Day 2 was a success, I guess, in terms of publicity and bad press for Microsoft and really just getting the thought into people's heads. While it was a tremendous success in those areas, it was a complete failure in other areas, and that the areas I'm speaking to are really, you know, like ridding ourselves, right, of this problem of what I call the Microsoft tax, right? And I say that because back in 99, you know, back in the day of that initial effort, it was bad enough, right, that we'd be forced to pay for one operating system that we had no intention of using. Well, nowadays, in the year 2003, we're actually, well, I'll speak for myself here, I was actually charged for two operating systems that I have no intention of using, right, and I'm speaking about, what is it, the XP Home Professional and the 2000 Professional.
Explain how you get stuck paying for two.
Well, because even though the computers nowadays, and I'm curious to know, I'd love to hear from other people, you know, who may have found themselves in this same situation, but if you look closely at the documentation that comes with these systems today, you'll see that in most cases, XP is pre-installed, right, because that's supposedly the latest and greatest flavor for Microsoft. But because people are still in, I guess, what I'll call that transitioning phase, 2000 also comes on the media, right, that's bundled with the documentation and whatnot. So, as a matter of fact, I have a copy that I'm going to be bringing to court on Thursday of the, what would that be, the sales slip, and, you know, the general advertisements for the product that I purchased from Toshiba. And it even clearly states right on there that XP and 2000 are both included with the system. So I think the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, sometimes I get the sense that people, they're a little sick about sick and tired of hearing about this story, and, oh, some guy in Australia got a refund 5 years ago, and, you know, it kind of can be made to sound like a beaten horse, right, or dead issue. But the situation has gotten worse, so I think a lot of people are shocked when I tell them, hey, guess what? You know, I got charged for two operating systems that I have no intention on using. So I think it makes them look a little closer at their sales slip to see, hey, do I land in that category also? So.
So what's the focus of the day then?
Well, it's
more educational, teaching people how to launch a lawsuit.
Yeah, and actually, I started going into that. Yeah, and I started saying that the goals are very different, right? The strategy is very different. In fact, I should really thank on record here. I should really thank Walt Pennington for being such an inspiration. Some of you may have read some of his articles that I have posted up on WindowsRefund.net. And Walt gave me a great idea, and when we started talking about the initial Windows Refund Day campaign and how it was really a group effort, et cetera, et cetera, and we went over the pluses and the negatives of what it had accomplished, we both agreed at the end of the conversation that this needs to move into the courtroom. It's gone so far beyond, you know, what can be accomplished by, you know, a camera and a microphone and an article being published all over the place. And I mean, it needs to get before a judge, and a judge needs to make a decision, and we need to have some precedents lie down that, you know, empowers end users to claim their refund. This is really a case of fraud.
Yeah.
So
we're running a little tight on time, so can I ask you a couple of really directed question.
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, a lot of this is in my opinion type of things. If this kind of an attack is going to work, or this kind of approach, I should say, is going to work, the appropriate resources need to be in place, not just a website called WindowsRefund.net. Do you have, or will you have soon, available to people, number one, the basic resource of how to go about filing suit?
That's a great question. Actually, I spent some time a couple of weeks ago, and I put together a refund how-to. I checked your webpage today, actually, and I see that there is a link pointing to the how-to. I've gotten great responses, you know, on it. So I think, and just judging by the number of reads it has, I mean, I think it has like 2,000 reads. So I think a lot of people are digesting the information. Basically, all the steps are outlined in the refund how-to about how to find out what courthouse you need to go to, how to find out who the registered agent is for the company you're targeting, right? Because if the company does not exist or does not do, or I'm sorry, doesn't reside in the state that you live in, you know, you need to go through some legwork to actually find out who the registered agent is.
Generally, really, is not that tough. It's generally filed with the Secretary of State, at least in Illinois. I know that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, just for FYI for the listeners, a registered agent is typically a lawyer that represents the company in that state.
Mm-hmm.
But so keep going.
Yeah, the steps that I outlined in that how-to, and I, you know, I wrote it clearly in there that they pertain to my situation and, you know, my specifics dealing with New York, et cetera, et cetera. But I tried to phrase things as generally as possible so that they can be used in other environments. So yeah, to answer your question, the refund how-to is a work in progress. Obviously, it's a living document. I posted some sample forms on there from the small claims court that are hopefully useful to show an example of what kind of form is expected to be filled out, et cetera, et cetera. So if anyone has any suggestions that's listening at IRC right now, feel free to send me any correspondence so I can take those suggestions under consideration.
Have you got a history yet in terms of how much this has cost a couple of people who have already got? I know you've got 10 people who are committed to it.
Right.
They're going to be doing this on Thursday, but there's a couple people who have already started, have they not? And so have you got an idea of the cost involved in doing this?
No, I don't, but it's got to be minimal. I mean, the fee for filing a claim, you know, in small claims court is roughly $20. I think it's $23 or something trivial. And we're not talking about, you know, soliciting the services of a lawyer or anything like that. I mean, that's what small claims is for. So I think anybody who reads the refund how-to is going to be armed with enough information, you know, to make sure that they sent a letter to the OEM in question or the, you know, the place of purchase to save their fax receipt, you know, get all these essentials in place. And I think once those steps are carried out, I think a strong case is going to be present that it should be low-hanging fruit, in my opinion, with minimal cost. And that's really what I wanted to do for this, is to try and decentralize, you know, the Windows Refund Day.
Yeah. I think it would behoove you, as the people do file their cases, if you would come up with a form where you can quantify the amount of time it took people to do this, the amount of money they spent, things like that, the complexity involved, and put that on the website. Because I think there's a natural hesitance when people are engaging in lawsuits to fear that they may be opening up a Pandora's box of excessive cost.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I can understand that, and I'm glad you're bringing it up, because I'll be the first to tell you that I've been actually surprised. I mean, before this experience, I was not familiar with the small claims court by any means. Also, I was not familiar with the process involved to filing a complaint with my local attorney general or attorney general's office, and I was also surprised at how easy that was to accomplish. I mean, just filling out a form on the web, faxing it in, simply making a phone call to confirm that the fax was received, and you know, I'm in the middle of that dialogue now with that office. And if you had asked me before I decided to jump in with both feet, you know, am I looking forward to filing a claim with that office, I would have said no, not really. But it's surprisingly pretty simple. So, but I'll definitely be tracking that information. That's something I've been thinking
about.
Where's
this thing going? If you're going to do this in small claims court, obviously you're not interested at this point, at least, in raising it to a class status.
I am interested,
you're not going to do that in small claims court.
No, right, but unfortunately I'm not driving the bus on that one.
But I think that's a good way to start the ball going.
I think, judging from some conversations that I've had with people involved in those circles, I think that a good number of small claims court cases, as well as, right, what are the outcomes going to be, I think is going to go a long way towards justifying the time and expenses involved with building a class action. That's the feeling I get.
Well, I mean, after the 1,000th claim or the 2,000th claim in small claims court, you know, some judge is going to, or maybe even after just N, which might be fewer than that, some judge is going to pick it up and say, wait a minute, this should be a class.
Yeah, heck, we've got 50 people in the chat room right now. If all 50 of them went to their state's attorney's office,
mm-hmm.
Or their website and filled out a form, it would probably be enough right there for this to get turned into a class action.
Exactly.
I'd
like to think of this as minimal input, maximum output.
There's got to be a lawyer sitting out there just waiting for the critical mass on this. Because it's, you know, it's got to be, how many computers are sold in this country every year? You know, what, 6 million, 7 million computers just domestically? And so $100 times 6 million a year.
I'll tell you what, I'm looking for $600.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, how much is the Windows 2000 and the Windows XP that you
well,
got
I,
that
well,
you
because
want?
I don't know, right?
$119.
You and I don't know that. We have no confirmed source of information, right?
I do. It's $119 list retail price.
Okay. Well, before hearing that, I decided to go to CompUSA. I looked up the national average price of each operating system, of each product, and I said, okay, well, so $299 for Windows 2000 Professional and $299 for XP Professional, and I filled in the number just using a little math, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, we are up to the end of the time, and I tell you, let's stick on the story. If you get all 10 of them to follow through with Thursday, let's revisit this in a month when we've actually got some documents to show people.
Or maybe a little longer, I think, because keep in mind that filing on Thursday
mm-hmm.
does nothing more than to really book me an appointment, right, to show up in court. I think the window is 6 to 8 weeks for small claims.
Yeah. But that's fine. I'm six to 8 weeks out, whatever it is.
Right, right.
But can you imagine, even a relatively small percentage of Linux users, 1 or 2%, if they would all file suit?
That's it.
We're talking tens of thousands of lawsuits. Just with a small percentage. It would be an absolute hoot. So let's follow through on this.
And also one thing I just want to say to everybody listening, I don't want to create the perception that I'm not going to support anyone's involvement with this if they don't do it on the 23rd. I mean, obviously there's some prep time involved, right? A little legwork to kick things off. And if somebody files next month and contacts me, to let me know their progress, this and that, I'm going to be more than happy to start a dialogue with that person.
Yeah, well, if you get this into a class action, people could go back probably 10 years, as long as they've still got the computers, even if they don't have the paperwork. They could bring photos of the computers.
Right.
And it would probably be enough where people could...
I believe the statute of limitations on an issue like this is 6 years.
Okay.
That just goes back a couple of weeks to when I was, you know, doing a lot of reading about the court systems, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to say that it's 6 years. Of course, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but...
So 6 years times 6 million computers a year times $109. So, oh, boy.
Yeah, we could do something very powerful here.
Yeah. Think about a small fraction of that money in the coffers of the AOTC. Then we would win some elections, that's for sure. Well, gentlemen, we are up to the time. I'd like to thank you for coming in, Adam, once again, and talking to us about all of your effort.
Well, thanks again for the invitation.
You're welcome back anytime.
Right.
And really, on behalf of the entire crew here, folks, I'd really like to appreciate, or I do appreciate, you all coming here week after week and listening to the show. We're going to get some more of the hardware stories and the software stories in next week, we promise, especially with all the new stuff coming out this week at Linux World. We didn't even have time to go to Kevin for new product releases at all. I know you all look forward to those stories in particular. So we'll do a lot more of that next week. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you tell your friends to check us out. But there is a price for being a member of our little community here, and that is that we are a self-supporting little community here. Tell the companies that you work for that we're looking for sponsors, and if in lieu of that, you can help us out a great deal by paying the electric bill and paying the phone bill, by sending your friends, relatives, and business associates off to our domain registration tool so we can make a couple bucks off of a domain registration and keep this show coming to you week after week. We make the advertising here free as much as possible to Linux community organizations, but still we do have costs. So please help us out with that. In lieu of that, everybody, come back next week for another edition of the Linux Show, and we will be here as usual. So everybody, we're out of here. Enjoy the week.
Okay, take care.
Need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? Well, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor.